This is Inside the Net with Amber MacArthur, episode 19 for April 25th, 2006. Dan Cederholm. Bandwidth for Inside the Net is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. Now we are really getting weird. Here we are, both of us in Toronto, and yet I'm in my hotel room and you're at work. Amber,
I know.
Hello.
Hey, Leo, and you, we were together all day, and now we're doing our own show together.
I can't take it anymore. I'm going home.
You had to get away from me, I guess, Leo.
Oh, my God. You're such a prima donna.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Nothing could be more opposite, as a matter of fact. No, just for technical reasons, I thought it'd be easier for me to record in a separate internet. Oh, we don't need to tell people about that. We've got a great guest today.
We sure do. We have Dan Cederholm, who is a very well-known web designer, although he's also a very modest guy, so he probably won't tell us that. But he has done a lot of great designs for companies like Odeo, Fast Company, Google, a lot of the big players out there. And he has a great website called Simple Bits. He's also an author. And we definitely want to just chat with him and get his thoughts on where the web is going and what design is popular now. I'd be really curious to hear you talk about how you think web design has changed even in the past year, since a lot of these new products and services that you've worked on are relatively new.
Yeah, I think it has changed immensely. You know, probably my first very public work was the Fast Company redesign, which was at a time when web standards were just sort of burgeoning, and you had sites like Wired News and ESPN blazing the trail for CSS-based layouts, and so I was fortunate enough to work at Fast Company at the time, and had a boss that was flexible enough to say, "Okay, yeah, let's do this. Let's jump on this standards thing because it's going to be good for the business and good for the magazine." And so we redesigned that site, and you know, since this was probably 3 years ago now, which is kind of amazing to think. Since then, I mean, I think the standards, I hope, I mean, it's easy for someone sort of in the web standards world to think of it like a cocoon. So now you assume that everyone is using web standards and everyone's using CSS and understands the importance and the flexibility of it, but I think in the real world, in the big world, it's still not exactly fully embraced. So we still have some work to do in terms of getting keeping the message from being heard and still promoting that. So in terms of the last year, you know, obviously a lot's happened with the web application space, with the term Web 2.0, which I hate to use, sort of, but a lot more community-based sites, and that has sort of brought web standards along with it. That's one positive thing, that along with you know, things like tagging and micro formats and all this stuff's kind of converged together, and it's helped web standards. From the design standpoint, it's helped bring that along with it as a component that you really need to have as a new website coming out in 2006.
Look at for web standards, though? I mean, in the past, web standards were whatever worked with Internet Explorer. But now, obviously, you have to work with Firefox, and yet you have to make exceptions for Internet Explorer. I mean, and of course, the W3C can say whatever it wants, but if it doesn't work with the existing browsers, it's pointless. What is web standard these days?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. I mean, thankfully, Firefox is very standards compliant, so they're looking at the W3C specs as well as Safari, and they're adhering to what those specs are. Internet Explorer, you know, we're dealing with version 6 right now and 5 if you want to go back that far, but they didn't really stick to the standard. So, yeah, there's a lot of exceptions you have to make for getting sites to look correctly in Internet Explorer because of the CSS, the spotty CSS implementation, which so that requires a lot of hacks, and I like to call them patches, but basically fixes to make standard CSS look okay in Internet Explorer.
That's a lot and of what we do in Bulletproof Web Design, which is say, well, okay, yeah, if you want to make this work in the variety of browsers, this is what you have to do.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And then that's a tough, that's a very, that's the learning curve. So people just getting into CSS, they can look at the specs and they can see how things were intended to be, and then you have to say, oh, okay, well, it's got to look good in the Internet Explorer, of course, you know, because of the amount of users that are using it. And now you have to do a little bit of, you know, rejiggering of the CSS to make it look okay in Internet Explorer. And that's hopefully getting better with IE7, which who knows when it'll actually be out. But, the latest beta version, which I guess is completely finished in terms of CSS support, is promising. There's a few things that it still doesn't support, but there'll be a little less hacking and patching necessary for IE7, and maybe a whole host of other things we have to worry about, but we'll cross that bridge.
What do you think is going to make people start to believe that they have to use CSS and they have to, you know, adhere to standards? Because as you mentioned before, there's a lot of websites out there that really aren't doing that, and I'm sure there's some reluctance to, you know, want to invest the time and the money in making that happen.
Yeah, it really is. I think, you know, very basically there's a lot of advantages. There's an advantage from changing the design standpoint. So your markup can stay the same while the CSS can change and drastically change the look and feel of the website. Whereas if you're dealing with a table-based design, the content and the design are intermingled. So it's sort of like a tear down everything and start over approach, rather than the content stays the same while just changing the CSS will alter the design. So it is a little bit more upfront. If someone's invested in a table-based design and is thinking about changing to CSS, there will be obviously an upfront time investment. But in the long run, their maintenance time, once the CSS design is implemented, will be far less. I mean, they'll be able to change things quite more easily, and not to mention load time is a heck of a lot faster. There's a smaller amount of code required to render a site that's using CSS and semantic markup, and then you have the search engine increased search engine visibility just because of using semantic markup and that type of thing. So there's a lot of advantages to it, but sometimes it can be a hard sell depending on the size of the site and the amount of time it's invested in a traditional table-based layout.
I hope you pro designers will forgive me, but maybe I can ask you to define a few terms because we're using a lot of buzzwords here. CSS is...
Oh, it's cascading style sheets. So the idea here is that CSS controls the design and the appearance of the page, while markup, or aka the HTML, is sort of defining what the content is. So you've got your headers and your lists and your links and all that stuff. That's your markup. CSS would be the icing on top that places things, adds color, adds background images, that type of thing. It's really quite powerful.
Something like CSS Zen Garden.
Yes.
The CSS can be changed. The content and HTML never change. And
exactly.
The look can change 100%.
Yeah, that's a great example, and it's a fantastic resource to point people to show that... you know, the same markup can look drastically different when a new CSS file is applied, which is actually separate from the markup. So, and that's why I was saying that it'll be really easy for people to change the look of their site if once they've set up a site using CSS, changing it later on, add a new CSS file, and you've got a whole new design.
What is semantic HTML? Because I hear that a lot, too.
Yeah, semantic HTML, it basically means adding meaning to the markup. So, for instance, you might a heading on a page, for instance, the title of a page. You might want to use a heading tag for that, like H1, H2, H3, rather than, say, wrapping it in the paragraph and using a break tag or whatnot. So semantic markup is basically, wrapping the content in the most appropriate element, HTML element, available. So for a list, you'd use a UL or an ordered list tag. And it's the foundation of the site. So it's important to use the correct markup so that devices and browsers can interpret the page the way it was intended. And when you take the CSS away, which would be the design part, say a screen reader or a handheld device could still read the markup and know what the content is and how to interpret it correctly.
And one question I have for you is, I know, again, you work with a lot of different clients, and I'm sure you approach and have too many potential clients on the go, but what is one of the things that some of your clients tend to ask you in terms of what they're trying to achieve with web design? Because I can just imagine that they come in and they all want different things, but is there kind of a common thread that's happening nowadays in terms of what goal they want to reach? They want the Web 2.0 look, or what's sort of the general goal of the clients?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you're right. There, a lot of clients are coming and saying, we want, well, this is sort of the bad side of it is, we want a Ruby on Rails site using Ajax and and CSS and web standards and micro formats.
We want a buzzword compliant site.
Exactly. Like so they'll explain the buzzwords first, and that'll become before, okay, what does the site actually do? What's the purpose? And what do you really need that stuff? So I think that's the downside to the whole Web 2.0 thing. There's a positive there, and I think just like I was saying earlier, like bulletproof web design, it's sort of a weird term for it, but a buzzword can help to round up a set of techniques or a set of ideas to get them to the masses and help people understand. So, a lot of people are coming to me saying, "Yeah, we want web standards, we want micro formats, Ajax, all that." But there's a lot of positive stuff happening with that. There's a lot of sites working together with open standards and building communities, and it's kind of an exciting time. I've had a lot of been fortunate to work on some good projects lately, and I just hope it continues. I mean, we'll see if it'll be interesting to see what of these sites sticks and what fail. And I think unfortunately a lot of them will sort of fizzle out, and then the real decent ideas will stay afloat. But
all right,
we'll see.
We're gonna make you get out your crystal ball and tell us what sites you're looking at.
That's exactly
survive.
What I was gonna ask.
Yeah.
Oh, which sites I think will stay afloat? You mean?
Yep.
Okay.
And I'm writing it all down.
that's a great question. I think. I think a site like. I have to say Odeo, I guess. I worked on the
you
site.
You worked
but,
on it, yeah.
That's okay.
Design-wise. I think that has a lot of promise in
what
terms
of what
they're doing.
What was the assignment with Odeo?
Assignment was design, basically. They had a logo done early on when they were building the site, and they
that's,
came to
that
me
that chicken?
Build it. No, actually, I did. I don't have anything to do with the chicken, although I do like the chicken.
It's a little weird.
Leo doesn't like the chicken, just so you know, Dan.
Okay.
It scares
me.
Well,
that's good.
It's
scary. in that case, good. I did not do the chicken. it is a little scary, but it sort of makes sense in that it's sort of tweeting, and I don't know. For some reason, it makes sense for me. But the assignment was the design, and you know, mostly early on with the site. I haven't been doing much with them lately. But in terms of what Dan does,
he does icons too. I mean, it's not merely web design. You do icons.
Yeah, I enjoy icons. It goes back to an obsession with Atari and Nintendo and stuff. I think thinking in the pixel. It's been something that's been successful in terms of selling stock icons on Simple Bits, and something I need to do more of because
it's also the haiku of design, because you have so few bits to work with.
Yeah, I love the constraint. I love tiny stuff and trying to convey a complicated message in a small amount of space. It's fun. I guess it sort of dates you in terms of I love what Susan Kare did with the original Mac OS icons, and I was a big BOS fan years ago.
Beautiful icons of BOS, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, great icons, fantastic, so it's always been something I've loved to do. I don't consider myself at the caliber of what Icon Factory is doing or Firewheel Design is another great one. But it's something that I've been able to offer on the side. It's been great, and then it's helped the business in terms of design work. People wanting icons.
Interesting that you should mention BOS, because I think in many ways the look of Web 2.0 kind of echoes BOS. I hadn't thought about it before, but now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I mean, there was some fantastic iconography and interface design in BOS, and I don't know what's happening with it now. I'm sure there's like someone keeping it alive out there. But,
there's an open source project trying to maintain.
Oh, good.
They never released the source code, so it's kind of hard to do.
Right. That was a shame that I had great faith that BOS would take over the world, but it didn't.
Me too.
Oh, good.
It's excellent. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now owned by Palm, which of course will do nothing with it. That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad.
But there is this open source project. I hope that they manage to. They're really kind of having to reinvent it, to recreate it, to bring it back.
Right, because they don't have the actual source. Oh, jeez. It was just so fast and well thought out. And oh well, is the good word. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Dan, what are some of you mentioned Odeo, so I'm still going to try to dig one or two more out of you as well.
Yes. Okay, so sites that I think will still be here in a year, maybe? Is that a good...
That's good, or even just designs that you think are successful. And that are really working well for the users that they're trying to attract.
Yeah. I think, I'm a huge Flickr fan, only because I love to just take photos, and I think they've done a great job in terms of keeping the interface out of the way. I mean, they could have gone nuts with the interface, and I think they've kept it really simple and restrained, and just the focus is on the photos, which is what the site is about. So I think I'm starting to get less away from eye candy and more into how the site operates and does it do the job well in terms of interactivity, and again thinking of the web as the web and not as a magazine ad or something. So Flickr would be another one. I was trying to think of others here.
You mentioned Blinksale, the new redesign of Blinksale. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great. I'm a big fan of Firewheel Design. They do great stuff. And in the new Blinksale, they just launched a new 2.0 version of it, and it's great. I mean, they have bold colors, and I think they've managed to do simple but yet still very visually appealing, and with bright colors But so they're still doing this the simple thing. They're doing like a 37 signals simplified web application kind of thing. But they're also adding their own stamp on it, and I think it's pretty great. That's yeah. a great example.
It's
both,
I think
both
that,
Amber and I use it.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's
good.
Yeah, it's almost one of the most underrated web apps I think out there right now. You don't hear a lot about it, but for the people who use it, they're that's all they use, and it's the best one. And you're right, the 2.0 version of it is fantastic. I mean, they just added so much and cleaned it up. You know, it's almost like they were experimenting the first time they came around, and then now they know it's successful, and then they're launching an app that's sort of a real app that pretty much anyone could use.
Yeah, it's the real deal. It's like it's amazing, and it doesn't hurt that they're amazing icon designers. So you've got that sort of sprinkled throughout. It's a fan. It's great. Huge fan of that.
Definitely. So what, because a lot of the listeners are, I'm sure, are trying to develop their own websites and, whether it's on the business side or personal side, what advice would you have for them, getting started and getting noticed out there?
Yeah. Getting noticed. That's good. I mean, I would say, just keep at it, keep writing, keep going. I mean, I've had good success with, as a web designer, I should say, I've had good success with having something else to sell, like a product, like an icon set or a T-shirt, which is kind of crazy. But I think keep writing, keep doing things. Maybe if you're a freelance designer, then try to think of a way of having a revenue stream that's different than just dealing with a client. So having a product or something to sell, that helps immensely. Getting noticed is tough. It's sort of that's a big secret. It's like I sort of relate it to like an indie band or something. How do you get noticed? If what you're doing is good, I think eventually you'll be noticed. And if you keep at it, and what you're doing is good, then eventually you're gonna do okay.
So when do we see the Dan Cederholm app?
The Dan Cederholm app. I've been working on something that's coming out relatively soon. I can't say too much about it because it's not public yet. But I've been working on it with a friend of mine, Dan Benjamin, who's a very talented developer, and it's I can just say it's wine related. So all you wine lovers out there, there'll be something relatively soon.
Amber and I have both commented on the fact that the new web-based services like BlinkSale, like Odeo, all seem to be done by web designers. It's like a chance for web designers suddenly to get in the game.
Yeah, that's a great point. I do a lot of client work, working with clients and creating designs and then handing them off and saying, okay, thank you for the opportunity for the work and good luck with it. And they'll implement it. And sometimes it'll be, kind of a mess. And then oftentimes it's not. But, as building a product, it gives the web designer a chance to really have control over the whole thing and say, if I was going to build this, this is how I would do it, and not have that sort of client saying, well, this is, our investors want us to do this, or we want to do it this way. So I think it's a great opportunity for a web designer. I can see why it's happening, because it's almost like we can't wait to just bust out of the gate and do something our way. So I think we'll see a lot more web apps come from web designers.
Has 37 Signals being an inspiration in that area?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think they sort of blazed the trail in that way. They were a design firm, and have completely shifted and turned into into a product company where they're building their own, they're only working on their own stuff, and that's got to be really satisfying to have complete control over something and do it right and do it, have all that attention to detail. And then they've sort of, you know, the self-publishing thing with their book, I think we'll start to see, all of a sudden, we'll start to see a lot of self-published books out there as well. So that'll be interesting to see that.
Are you talking the Getting Real book that they just published recently? That's fantastic reads. So are you following, for the Dan and Dan app that you won't tell us too much about, are you following the process that they outline in the book Getting Real, which is about not having meetings, it's about really working on the interface first and not doing functional spec documents and those types of things? Is that something that you guys are trying to do?
Yeah, I think it happened that way. I mean, we've been working on it for a while now, but I come from the sort of the same area, and I don't really wireframe all that much at all, it's much more an iterative process, and sort of, you know, just build it first and play with it and see what works, rather than thinking about it or putting it on paper. I just think the web is it's hard to build that way. I think, at least for me, I like to see it in action and actually interact with it while we're building it. And so that's certainly the way this app has gone. And something that has been immensely helpful that might be of interest is we've been using SVN, Subversion.
Instead of CVS.
Which is, exactly, yeah. It's basically the same idea there. So what we can do is actually work on the app on our own machines, fully installed and database running, and we can work independently on it, commit changes, and then deploy it to a central server. So it allows you to sort of work on your own and work independently, and then you know, iteratively, is if that's a word, iteratively. I can't even say it.
Yeah, I think it's.
Yes,
word.
Thank you. That's perfect. you know, you can build on it and chip away at it. It's almost like, you know, a sculpture. It evolves and it changes, and it's not something that came out of a meeting and a wireframe. And then I think web design there's a certain process that many people stick to, and that is, you know, wireframe and then comp it. Have a designer comp it and then code it and then put it up, and that can work too. But if it's something that you're really invested in, you're involved in on a personal level, it's much more gratifying to work. I've found it to work this way, being able to make changes, you know, little changes repeatedly over long periods of time. I think the end product turns out to be a lot more solid.
It's kind of interesting. Versioning systems are used by open source programmers, so many different programmers can work on a project. To apply it to web design is interesting. So, I mean, obviously you're doing a programming project as well, but can it work for web designers to use a CVS or SVN?
Yeah, I think absolutely, and I think it's an untapped area in terms of a web designer using like SVN or CVS to make markup and CSS changes. I know that it's a way that I love to work, and a lot of times without CVS or SVN, I would be creating a template and instead of comping the whole thing in Photoshop, like creating a static image of a page, I much prefer to just start building it with code. And then perhaps taking screenshots of things here and there, bringing that into Photoshop and manipulating it a little bit, and then applying those changes to the code again. So in that sense, the SVN was helpful because I could just I could work with the real thing. I could work with the actual application and make small changes here and there. And you know, as long as you know where to make your changes and not screw anything up, I think a web designer has it's just very satisfying to make changes that way and to be able to work chipping away at things rather than sort of doing something for a week and then handing it over and being done with it.
Mm-hmm. So
it's a different way to work, but
Yeah, it almost seems like you've eliminated the need for a lot of people involved in the process, and from information architects to even having the backing of a business or working with a client to develop an app. You know, a web designer these days could really, you know, from start to finish, develop their own products, which is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm trying to eliminate people's jobs. That's basically my goal. but no, you're right. I mean, I think a designer that's not afraid to get their hands dirty in a little code, coupled with a developer that's not afraid to get their hands dirty in a little bit of CSS or markup or what have you, between two people, you really can create something from start to finish.
Definitely.
That way. I think you're right.
Leo, it reminds me almost, and you have way more experience than I do in the broadcast world, but almost on the broadcast side, where you used to need this entire big crew to produce a television show, and then, you know, now on our own, we're able to do it. So it's interesting to see that in other industries.
Yeah, and we all know small teams work better and do a better job and have more commitment to the project, et cetera, et cetera. Uh-huh. What is your background,
Dan? I feel more invested.
Are you a programmer? Are you a graphics designer? Because, I mean, CSS is both, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a mixture. It's true. It helps to have a little bit of both in it. My background is music, actually, so neither. I did a little bit of school in audio engineering, and I was set to either play music or record it. And then got into the web, as it was starting, and I basically just bought a computer and viewed Source for years and sort of learned on my own. And I've always had an interest in design and especially from the world of like music packaging, so CD and 7-inch covers and sort of from that world. Influenced by the web as it was evolving and playing on my own and figuring things out.
Very cool. So when will we be able to see, I know you won't tell us the date for the app you're doing, but any other work from you coming out soon that we'll be able to take a peek at?
One of the problems of being like the hired designer on stuff is that a lot of times you're not able to talk about it until it's out because I'm just a hired hand. So I will say the Dan project. that's what it'll be known as from now on.
Sorry.
Actually, should be out in a couple weeks, I think, even. So it's really close to being done. I'll be announcing it on Simple Bits and that type of thing.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Dan. This has been great. And you also have two books, right? You have Bulletproof Web Design and another book that you wrote a while ago?
Yeah, Web Standard Solutions, which is a book by Friends of Ed, the publisher. That was the first book, yeah.
Anybody who does any CSS should absolutely read Bulletproof Web Design. I mean, I'm not a CSS coder, but it absolutely opened my eyes to a whole new way of thinking about it.
Oh, wow. I really appreciate that. That's great to hear. Right. That's awesome.
It's also a good read. I mean, it's just a good-looking book, and it's fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, working with new writers was great in terms of, the book could be color and more designed and that type of thing. It was great.
It's really nice to have a color web design book. You'd think they'd all
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Dan. And we'll let you get back to work now.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me.
Dan Cederholm. You were telling me, Amber, that a lot of these web design superstars now are practically like rock stars at these conferences. Is Dan one of those?
You know, I think Dan is a bit of a rock star, but he doesn't have the full rock star persona. I met last week. I went to Flash in the Can, which is a very popular Flash conference held in Toronto, but it's an international conference. And one of the designers there was Joshua Davies, I think his name is. He does some work for BMW, some other big players out there. And he was telling me about some of the jobs he has from going over to Berlin and driving the new BMW. He's got tattoos all over his body. They put him up in a penthouse suite. You know, he really looks like a rock star. star. He acts like a rock star. Not in a bad way, because he was a very nice guy. But everybody around him, all the designers at the conference, wanted to meet him. And, you know, I really feel as though, you know, there's a lot of these people who, you know, have become quite famous based on some of their design work online, which is really interesting.
Well, and I don't think it's much of a coincidence that Dan Cederholm was a musician. We know a lot of people who were into music who have become web designers or programmers. There is a certain kind of, this is the new rock and roll, isn't it?
It really is the new rock and roll, and I think that you find that a lot with people who are into music. They also tend to like being into technology as well. And Leo, I saw you play the ukulele today.
I'm going the other way. I want to be a real rock star. I don't think it's going to happen.
I shouldn't have mentioned the ukulele then.
That's okay. It's my new instrument. I'm working on it. I have to. I have a long way to go. A lot to learn still. But then I have a lot to learn in web design and programming, too. So I guess I just have a lot to learn, period. It's fun to read Dan's book, even if, I mean, I'm not a CSS pro by any means. In fact, far from it. I'm certainly, as anybody can tell when they look at my website, it's not a web design pro. But I'm learning so much from Dan's book and other books that you've been giving me. You turned me on to Dan in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I got a bunch of books from Peach Pit Press, a bunch of design books, and it was really amazing. I started going through them, CSS Zen Garden.
Yeah, I brought that home today.
That's a great book, Bulletproof Web Design. There's a lot of them out there. And what's really interesting is you would think that these designers didn't all necessarily know each other because they live all over the place. But in fact, they do know each other, and they're all friends, and they all work together. They speak at conferences together. And it's definitely a tight community, and they're really changing the face of the web these days.
I meant to ask Dan, and I regret not asking. Maybe we'll have to get him back and ask him, why is it that all of these sites, these Web 2.0 sites, look alike? There's a certain commonality of design, a use of pastel colors, large fonts, very clean, simple design, a focus on horizontal rather than vertical. Is it just trends?
I know, you know, that's so funny because I wanted to ask him that. I wanted to say, is there going to be a point when all of these sites end up looking so much alike and they're so polished and they all have big fat buttons on them that really nothing stands out anymore?
Right.
And there's going to be, you know, another new wave of type of design which is going to go, you know, completely in another direction. And who's going to be the first person to lead that direction? And, you know, I also didn't get a chance to ask him that, but it's a great question because I think there is a trend today where the sites are starting to all look like they were designed by the same person. Our same company in some ways, and it would be neat to really see something that is completely out there and completely different.
Well, that's the beauty of CSS, isn't it? Even if trends change, styles change, it's a trivial thing if you do it right to change your site's look completely without changing any of the content at all.
Yeah, it really makes a big difference. That's why the site you mentioned, CSS Zen Garden, is a great place for people to go and just be able to see the power of CSS and see it live. And you know, it's pretty amazing, and it's art in some ways.
We should get Molly on this show, the author.
Yeah, we should. We should get Molly and Dave Shea. They wrote it together. Yeah, let's try to do that. They would be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's an example of a site. In fact, there's one in the book, I think it is, where normally CSS Zen Garden sites tend to be kind of vertical. But just to show that it can be done, there's one that is vertical and horizontal depending on a button that you push. It's pretty remarkable. You could do anything with CSS.
Yeah, you really can. Yeah. You know, the people who know CSS and who know it well and who are the pros, I'm sure they're just, they're rolling in business right now.
And rightly so, because what they do is pure magic.
It really is.
Well, speaking of magic, it's been magic doing the show with you today.
Yeah, you too, Leah.
We'll see you again next Tuesday.
Of course.
Another travel inside the net.